There's always a point of inflection in our lives which changes the course of who we are, what we are doing, and what the future looks like. It's also a crossroad where you suddenly stand and you realize, oh my God, I've been staring at it for so long and not getting it. That moment in my life came on the 3rd of October 2015 when I finally got up and chose to choose the country I live in. Literally got up, packed and moved after 10 years of living in a certain country which gave me luxury, privileges and of course a lot of money. The reason behind it, although very, very superficial, or may I say normal, like change of job, unwilling to raise a family there, I think the root of it all lied in my mental health condition, which I finally had come to accept, and that I was brutally lonely, and I could not yet, in my mid-30s, figure out my real purpose. Why am I saying this to you? Because that started me on a journey which has led me to this podcast. And as it happens with life, when you change your course, things around you all organize themselves to help you achieve your greater purpose. And as with life, the moment you change your direction, everything just organizes itself around it. I moved back to India and suddenly the purpose of my life became more and more clear. I wanted to work with people for them. If that sounds like the preamble or the democracy manifesto, it is not. I wanted to work with people who have at some point gone through those dark, cloudy days when you're down on your knees and you're burnt out and you're crying and you can't reveal it to anybody else. Those moments where the world thinks that you have a picture-perfect life and they could give their right hand for what you have. But here you are looking at the mirror getting scared. Moving back to India not only gave me a lot of confidence and a lot of sense of purpose, it also made me realize that maybe that point of inflection came because I was supposed to work in this direction. In the last couple of years, I've met a lot of people like me. And one of them is Tonmoy Goswami. He's the associate editor for ET Prime. And he's very, very vocally championing the cause of mental health illness. Not only that, he's always putting out his conditions out on Twitter. He's telling you how he has had his panic attacks today. He's also telling you how he totally got up, put himself together, and then got through the day. Tonmoy is also telling you on Twitter, rather admitting on Twitter, how he missed therapy again. And he doesn't mince his words when he says, today was a very, very bad day. While all this is going on, I look at his feeds and think, if he can be so brave, why can't we have more conversations on mental health? I want to sit down and understand how someone who's on medication and goes to therapy comes to work in such a high-performing role. He's the associate editor of ET Prime, as I mentioned. You're keeping one eye at the Wall Street and one eye at the BSC. How do you even manage to do such an important job when you have been diagnosed with a condition like that? Today in this podcast, we sit down and talk about our own demons.
Mind games. Mind games. Mind games. With Anandita Chatterjee.
Tonmoy, I understand you suffer from depression and you're on medication and on therapy. Yes. But then you have a very important role at work. Did you actually tell your bosses about it?
That was actually one of the first things that I did when I joined the company. In fact, on my first day in the company, when the HR gave me a bunch of documents to fill, one of those was this health form that most people tend to leave blank or, you know, generally fill it up with garbage. But I decided to be honest about it. And then later when I joined, I've always had a fairly public persona where I talk about depression and anxiety. So these things were already out there in the open. And I'd imagine my bosses and my colleagues were already aware of my condition. But once I joined, there were extensive conversations that I had with them. In fact, I've had episodes in the office where I've, just collapsed and had crying bouts, and I've never held myself back. So huge credit to my bosses. It's not easy to manage people with.
But Tonmoy, do you think that the Indian corporate scenario is ready for having more Tonmoys at work? Because, and how did you, did you face discrimination? Did you
not walk, at all. Not at all. I didn't face discrimination, but just to address the earlier part of your question about whether the corporate world is ready for more people like me, I don't think it's an option, really. I think most companies don't even know they're living in this sort of blissful ignorance. But every company has people like me.
Yes.
And you know.
But the point is, you know, there's so much of coming out in terms of 377.
Yes.
But I think there is a huge need to come out.
Yes.
And say, I am, you know, going through the addiction or I'm on medication. I don't think enough people are coming and telling their companies.
Yeah.
And I think it stems from the fear of being stigmatized.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I can't speak for everybody. I should say that loud and clear. I'm extremely fortunate to work in a very progressive company, at least in my experience. But I know of several other people who've been crusading for this for decades, and they have been ostracized fairly severely. Some of them have told me that they lost their jobs when they opened up. Some of them told me that you know, they actually were pushed to the brink of suicide because of the discrimination that they faced in the office once they mustered up the courage to talk about it. But at the end of the day, you know, I feel there is really no other way to do this. You spend, you know, 12 hours of your day working, and depression and anxiety, if you've lived with it for any period of time, you would know that these are extremely difficult to hide. You cannot paper over these problems. So they will surface, and they will surface at unpredictable times. And then you have to cook up some story, and one day you're going to get caught. And that to me is much more stigmatizing, that living with that shame like a criminal.
Sure.
Than coming out openly and honestly.
You know, Tanmay, you were mentioning about, you know, how people were getting discriminated about and that led to suicide. In fact, I was reading the recent World Health Report says that one out of every three Indians are now depressed. And we have the highest number of suicides because of depression. And that is something I read recently. And it got me thinking how there is such a big problem. And it's only when probably a popular figure like Deepika Padukone speaks about it, or, you know, Shaheen Bhatt, who's been campaigning for it, came out. At least I would say that a conversation has begun.
Yes.
I remember growing up to a mother who I believe had some bipolar issues, which now when I reflect back, I realized. Mm-hmm. Now, what it led to is a very fractured relationship.
Sure.
In my mother-daughter relationship. And I never understood, because why is she doing this?
Mm.
You know, now at this age, when I see her and I say, hey, mom, I think there was a problem all along and none of us, you know, you couldn't talk about it. Nobody realized. And at least what I feel now is that more and more women at least can now come out and talk about it, whether it's postpartum depression, whether it's just workplace anxiety. I mean, what I feel is that at least the conversations have begun. They have become water cooler conversations.
Yep.
And I have a lot of people in my team who call up and say, look, I'm going to therapy today. I will need time off. And again, I think both you and I work in companies which gives us that space. But do you feel that ever since these popular figures have at least started talking about it, it has affected the movement?
Yeah, I think the movement as an abstraction, it has certainly helped. There is undeniably more momentum now. I don't think Deepika Padukone's coming out and talking about it has yet made a difference to the ordinary guy on the street. But like all good things, this is going to take time. And if it takes celebrities, we are a celebrity crazy country. So if it takes celebrities to come and lend their voice to give this a leg up, so be it. I also feel that, you know, there is a risk in a lot of celebrities coming out and talking about it. It's a great thing, but there is also a risk which we need to acknowledge, which is that there is a very strong set of school of opinion, especially on social media, that depression is some sort of a highfalutin elite problem. You know, there are people who will come and tell you, oh, just get on with it, you know, like, don't be silly, you know, life is good. And what do you have to complain about? And
I also read a lot of go exercise,
yeah,
which bothers me. I mean, I know exercise does help.
Yeah.
But to say, oh, zara bahar jao, thoda mahol change kar lo, holiday le lo. I mean, those kind of stuff when they float around. And also the Ayush committee saying that you know, try
try
ginger and try stuff like that, you do think that what is this even getting at, and how are you basically you know, souffling over the whole matter when there are people who are, you know, holding their breath and cringing every night and probably crying themselves to sleep.
Absolutely. I mean, I always tell people that depression doesn't have home remedies. It is not, it's not hemorrhoids that you can treat with, you know, dadima ke nuskhe. It doesn't work that way. A lot of people live in denial. And obviously these signals from the government or from whoever else can be very confusing, bewildering. What one has to understand is that by definition, depression debilitates you. It is very difficult to get your routine act together. Forget about going and meeting a doctor or going to a therapist. Those require an enormous amount of courage, a lot of family support. And I also, I the other aspect to all of this is, I think very little is said about the struggles of the caregivers.
Yes.
You know, in a sense, yeah, I am the one who's suffering. But for my family, it's a raw deal at times. And if my wife puts up her hand one day and says, you know what, I've had enough, I don't know who to turn to. So in a sense, or if my bosses do that, for instance, they just choose to one day say. So I think that this movement that we are seeing today has become a little, you know, a little exclusively about the people who are suffering. And we need to widen the gamut, really, and bring in people in our families and our friends, the ones that see us at our worst, and give them succor and help them to deal with us when we are down and out.
So somebody who's been diagnosed with depression, how do you do such an important job? Because I know you have a very important role to play in ET Prime and as the associate editor.
Yes.
Now, what happens? There are copies flying. There are... you know, financial conferences, the market is crashing.
Yeah.
And here you're sitting and your world's crashing down, literally.
Yeah.
How do you go about your day?
So I am what you would call a high functioning depressive, which basically means that I can pack in 15, 16 hours of work. And I'm able to conceal or manage my symptoms effectively. This has taken me 3 years of medication, 3 years of therapy to be able to arrive at this situation. I had to, actually, there was a time in between jobs when I was just not able to take on any full-time assignment. So I don't want to give the impression that it is par for the course what I'm doing. It is not. It has taken a lot of struggle. Having said that, I think the two things that have really helped me. One is I do not let go of any opportunity to talk about my problem. I think honesty, vulnerability, just trusting the random stranger that I meet and telling them my story, it has helped me normalize this. And I don't use the word normalize casually. But I needed to believe that this is all right, that, you know, that there is no great stigma or shame or taboo. The other thing that has helped me is, I think, just realizing that although I am depressed myself, It doesn't stop me from helping other people, even though I don't have medical qualifications. In fact, you would be surprised to know that you were talking about suicide earlier.
Yeah.
And now there are suicide gatekeeper courses, which in half an hour will empower anybody. And I mean anyone, from a school child to professionals like you and me, to get basic suicide prevention training. You don't need to be a therapist or a doctor to do that. So I have empowered myself in many different ways. I read like a maniac about, well, no pun intended, about depression, anxiety, and all sorts of mental disorders. The other thing that has helped me enormously, and I was telling you this before we started chatting, was how I use LinkedIn, you know, to talk about this.
I think what's brave about your story is that you brought it to your work front. I think something that most people are not able to do. I know of a lot of people who've confided in me that they go for therapy, but they will not put it out on the production floor or in front of bosses. And they will tell me in my personal capacity as their friend or as their colleague, but a lot of people report to me, but they will not tell me they are going for therapy. It's unfortunate. Maybe because I have not told them that this is totally okay. I mean, I have in my personal capacity. But in the long run, there has to be, how we've, you know, built the HR mechanism to tackle a lot of things, I think there's real need for this piece to be included in resource management, human resource management.
You know, businesses are by definition non-emotional. Businesses don't care about people and their problems. And I always knew that the choice that I was making by going public with it, it could backfire and backfire spectacularly. And I got the confidence to be public about it because I knew that I had it in me to continue to perform well day after day, that I wouldn't let my condition affect my work and that nobody can point a finger. And so, in fact, ET Prime started with me. I was the first person that they hired and it was just a concept. So I really didn't have any fallback and, I didn't have any excuses to not show up and do my best. In terms of putting in place HR mechanisms, it's very difficult. It is a lot more difficult than, let's say, having a progressive policy towards gender issues.
Sure.
And that's because the productivity of the average mentally ill person can swing wildly. And the moment you start creating special dispensation for people who are mentally ill, given that so many of us are undiagnosed, there's a strong possibility that there will be resentment because many people are fighting quietly. They don't want to talk about it. But the moment they see, okay, somebody, just because they have talked openly about depression, is getting treated a little differently by the company, it can cause enormous resentment. So these are tricky issues.
Also, I think what happens is that as you said, businesses are unemotional. I mean, there is a production metrics. You do have to bring in the revenue. The thing is that if somebody, you mentioned earlier that you're a high-performing individual. But in this case, let's say somebody, the depression or his condition gets the better of him.
Yeah.
Where he's missing work for weeks.
Yeah.
I would believe it would be difficult for a company to put their weight behind him and carry on. And how long? But even then, Tonmoy, shouldn't there be a sort of structure to this that, hey, if somebody comes up and says, like, for example, if somebody has a physical ailment.
Yes.
Without being morbid, somebody has a tumor or something and you give them a 4-week leave.
Yeah.
And, at the end of 4 weeks, he gets somewhat okay and comes back to work. Similarly, can't there be some allowances put in place?
Yeah.
I mean, my point about this is you've got lucky. Yeah. With your workplace and for your boss.
Yeah.
Most people might not.
True.
Shouldn't it be in provision?
Yeah, I mean, so, there are other kinds of mental or developmental disorders, let's say autism.
Yes.
And there are any number of companies from SAP to Desi Himalaya, Lemon Tree Hotels. They run extremely good career programs for people with autism. Because autistic people are known to be very good at repetitive tasks. And these guys shine in such setups. The challenge with creating a special sort of structure for other kinds of mental illnesses, let's say depression, anxiety, is that you cannot really put a timeline to how long it might take for somebody to get okay. If it is tumor, right, you know that there is a therapeutic procedure that you have to follow, and it is possible to say, all right, in, let's say, 6 months, you will get better.
Fair point.
But I have dealt with depression for 3 years. Actually, I've dealt with depression for 13 years. I was only formally diagnosed 3 years ago. How can a company make an allowance for that? To my mind, what would be far more effective, because, and I want to say this loud and clear, all the high-functioning depressives that I know, none of them really asks for any special treatment.
Hmm.
We are all okay to be treated like adults in a workplace which is out there to compete, I think what would really make a lot more sense is if all managers were given sensitivity training. I don't mind being docked my pay if I can't show up in office for 5 days, but I don't want to deal with a crappy boss who cannot handle me or, discriminates or is prejudiced. If I know that I can go back to a safe workplace, I'm okay with the financial damages. That's a choice that I have made, so I have to deal with it. I think the other thing is, you have to understand that a big reason why this is a taboo is because most organizations still look at career growth as a function of how quickly you can become a manager of teams. And understandably, there is hesitation on HR's part to bestow managerial responsibilities on somebody who might disappear for 6 months, right? So the individual-focused career track is non-existent in India. You cannot rise up the ladder in a company if you are an individual contributor. You have to be a manager. And if we can create special roles for people like me, for instance. Now, I have led 40 people teams in the past in Prime. Although we are a very flat structure, I sort of have an informal leadership role. I would say that, you know, there are several people that I have come into contact with in my capacity as a leader in the past, whom I know would do miserably as a manager, but they are just outstanding individual contributors. But our corporate mechanisms don't allow for such people to flourish. So why not have a special track rather than creating a separate ecosystem for patients of depression? Why not have a separate track in the company saying, you know what, anybody who's not fit to be a manager but is great as an individual contributor, this is the path for you. And then, you know, all sorts of people, not just depressives, people who don't have any illness, but exhibit the same properties or characteristics, they can be slotted in that path. To my mind, those are more practicable ways of dealing with this. Because creating a special structure for people with mental illness can throw open a Pandora's box.
Mind Games.
Mind Games.
Mind Games. With Anandita Chatterjee.